Hey there, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're talking about Ayn Rand's A Fountainhead. Sophie, I have to ask, did this book make you want to become an architect, or did it make you want to punch someone?
Honestly, both. It's such a polarizing book. For me, it's not really about buildings, it's about the terrifying loneliness of refusing to compromise your vision. The Fountainhead is Ayn Rand's philosophical manifesto wrapped in a dramatic story, and it asks this brutal question: what if the most talented people just stopped caring about being liked?
Right, and she uses architecture as the metaphor. But the real architecture is the soul, how you build a life. The main character, Howard Roark, gets expelled from architecture school in the very first scene because he refuses to design buildings in historical styles. He wants every building to be a pure expression of its purpose and materials.
Exactly. And that sets up the whole conflict. Roark is an egotist in the purest sense, not petty or greedy, but someone who holds his own judgment as the highest authority. He doesn't build for fame or money. He builds because he must. And there's this incredible moment where he dynamites a housing project he designed because it was altered without his permission.
That scene is wild. He'd rather blow it up than see his vision corrupted. And that's the climax of the novel, a literal explosion of the secondhand soul. But then you've got the villain, Ellsworth Toohey, who is not a greedy capitalist or a corrupt politician. He's a critic and a journalist who preaches selflessness and altruism.
Toohey is terrifying because he's so subtle. He doesn't attack Roark directly. He uses social pressure, poisons public opinion, starves him of commissions. And his philosophy is the exact opposite of Roark's. He believes the highest moral purpose is to live for others. But Rand reveals that this altruism is actually a mask for a hunger for power over the human spirit.
Toohey wants to create a world where no one dares to stand out. And then there's Peter Keating, the tragic figure. He's a talented architect who has everything Roark lacks: charm, social grace, a desperate need to be admired. He rises to the top by flattering people and designing what's fashionable. But his success is hollow. He's never created anything original.
Keating is the cautionary tale. He sells his soul for approval, and when he finally gets everything he thought he wanted, he realizes it means nothing. He's spiritually bankrupt. And then there's Dominique Franken. She's this complex, cynical woman who loves Roark because he's the first truly great man she's met, but she's terrified by it.
Dominique's logic is so twisted. She thinks she can't protect Roark from a world that would destroy him. So she decides to destroy him herself by marrying his enemies and trying to drag him down. It takes her the whole novel to realize that true love means accepting his greatness, even if the world tears him apart.
And then there's Gail Winant, the newspaper magnate who started with potential but sold out for power. He gives the public what they want: sensationalism, gossip, and tells himself he's in control. But when he tries to defend Roark, his empire crumbles. He discovers the mob he thought he controlled is actually his master.
Winant has the soul of a creator, but the life of a parasite. In the end, he publishes articles defending Roark's integrity, knowing it will cost him everything. He's the redeemed secondhander. But the philosophical heart of the book is Roark's courtroom speech at his trial for dynamiting the buildings.
That speech is a declaration of independence. Roark argues that the highest moral purpose is achieving your own happiness through your own creative mind. He rejects altruism as the doctrine of self-sacrifice. He says the creator's primary responsibility is to his own vision. He doesn't build for others, he builds for himself, because creation is the ultimate expression of his life.
It's a defense of rational selfishness. And it's so controversial, people call Rand's vision cold and elitist. Her characters are more like philosophical archetypes than real people. Roark is almost superhuman in his integrity, and Toohey is almost demonic. There's not much room for the messy compromises of real life.
But that's also why the book endures. It speaks to a deep desire for meaning and the courage to be yourself in a world that pressures you to conform. For many readers, it's transformative, a permission slip to take your own ambitions seriously and stop apologizing for wanting to be great. The ultimate takeaway is a radical redefinition of selfishness.
Rand doesn't mean greed or cruelty. She means living by your own mind, for your own happiness, and refusing to sacrifice your values to the whims of others. Rourke isn't a hero because he's successful. He's a hero because he's true to himself, even when that leads to poverty and public ridicule. His victory is spiritual.
And if you want to go deeper into this or any other big ideas, the whole library is over on 7minutebooks.com/app. They have over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language, starting at $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 for lifetime access.
The book ends with Rourke standing atop his greatest building, alone but complete. The fountainhead of all greatness, Rand says, is the independent, rational mind. And that's the takeaway I'm holding on to.
It's a radical celebration of the individual, flawed, polarizing, and but unforgettable. We'll see you in the next one.